It is the portion employed in DNA fingerprinting. Its practicality for this purpose was discovered accidentally by Alec Jeffries, a scientist at the University of Leicester in England. In 1986, Jeffries was studying DNA sequences for genetic markers associated with heritable diseases when he was approached by the police and asked if he could help connect a suspect to two murders. He realized his technique ought to work perfectly for solving criminal cases, and so it proved. A young baker with the improbable name of Colin Pitchfork was sentenced to 2 life terms in prison for the murders. Most of your DNA, in other words, is not devoted to you, but to itself. You are a machine for reproducing it, not it for you. A life, you will recall, just wants to be, and DNA is what makes it so. Even when DNA includes instructions for making genes, when it codes for them, as scientists put it, it is not necessarily with the smooth functioning of the organism in mind. One of the commonest genes we have is for a protein called reverse transcriptase, which has no known beneficial function in human beings at all. And the one thing it does do is make it possible for retroviruses, such as the AIDS virus, to slip unnoticed into the human system. In other words, our bodies devote considerable energies to producing a protein that does nothing that is beneficial and sometimes clobbers us. Our bodies have no chance but to do so because the genes order it. We are vessels for their whims. Altogether, almost half of human genes, the largest proportion yet found in any organism, don't do anything at all, as far as we can tell, except reproduce themselves. All organisms are in some sense slaves to their genes. That's why salmon and spiders and other types of creatures, more or less beyond counting, are prepared to die in the process of mating. The desire to breed, to disperse one's genes, is the most powerful impulse in nature. As Sherwin B. Newland has put it, empires fall, ids explode, great symphonies are written, and behind all of it is a single instinct that demands satisfaction. From an evolutionary point of view, sex is really just a reward mechanism to encourage us to pass on our genetic material. Scientists had only barely absorbed the surprising news that most of our DNA doesn't do anything when even more unexpected findings began to turn up. First in Germany and then in Switzerland, researchers performed some rather bizarre experiments that produced curiously unbizarre outcomes. In one, they took the gene that controlled the development of a mouse's eye and inserted it into the larva of a fruit fly. The thought was that it might produce something interestingly grotesque. In fact, the mouse eye gene not only made a viable eye in the fruit fly, it made a fly's eye. Here were two creatures that hadn't shared a common ancestor for 500 million years, yet could swap genetic material as if they were sisters. The story was the same wherever researchers looked. They found that they could insert human DNA into certain cells of flies, and the flies would accept it as if it were their own. Over 60% of human genes, it turns out, are fundamentally the same as those found in fruit flies. At least 90% correlate at some level to those found in mice. We even have the same genes for making a tail, if only they would switch on. In field after field, researchers found that whatever organism they were working on, whether nematode worms or human beings, they were often studying essentially the same genes. Life, it appeared, was drawn up from a single set of blueprints. Further probings revealed the existence of a clutch of master control genes, each directing the development of a section of the body, which were dubbed homeotic, from a Greek word meaning similar, or Hox genes. Hox genes answer the long bewildering question of how billions of embryonic cells, all arising from a single fertilized egg and carrying identical DNA, know where to go and what to do. That this one should become a liver cell, this one a stretchy neuron, this one a bubble of blood, this one part of the shimmer on a beating wing. It is the Hox genes that instruct them, and they do it for all organisms in much the same way. Interestingly, the amount of genetic material and how it is organized doesn't necessarily or even generally reflect the level of sophistication of the creature that contains it. We have 46 chromosomes, but some ferns have more than 600. The lungfish, one of the least evolved of all complex animals, has 40 times as much DNA as we have. Even the common newt is more genetically splendorous than we are, by a factor of 5. Clearly, it is not the number of genes you have, but what you do with them. This is a very good thing, because the number of genes in humans has taken a big hit lately. Until recently, it was thought that humans had at least 100,000 genes, possibly a good many more, but that number was drastically reduced by the first results of the Human Genome Project, which suggested a figure more like 35,000 or 40,000 genes, about the same number as are found in grass. That came as both a surprise and a disappointment. It won't have escaped your attention that genes have been commonly implicated in any number of human frailties. Exultant scientists have at various times declared themselves to have found the genes responsible for obesity, schizophrenia, homosexuality, criminality, violence, alcoholism, even shoplifting and homelessness. Perhaps the apogee, or nadir, of this faith in biodeterminism was a study published in the journal Science in 1980 contending that women are genetically inferior at mathematics. In fact, we now know almost nothing about you is so accommodatingly simple. This is clearly a pity in one important sense, for if you had individual genes that determined height or propensity to diabetes or to baldness or any other distinguishing trait, then it would be easy, comparatively easy anyway, to isolate and tinker with them. Unfortunately, 35,000 genes functioning independently is not nearly enough to produce the kind of physical complexity that makes a satisfactory human being. Genes clearly, therefore, must cooperate. A few disorders, hemophilia, Parkinson's disease, Huntington's disease, and cystic fibrosis, for example, are caused by lone dysfunctional genes, but as a rule, disruptive genes are weeded out by natural selection long before they can become permanently troublesome to a species or population.